I like that last song. I thought that was really tremendous. I hope you really take to heart those words, especially that last part of that chorus. God has planned for us to be sons forever in His kingdom. We will be God's family. Isn't that what the Feast of Tabernacles sort of portrays? What we want to look forward to? And we want to see God's family. We want to be there as a part of His family, all of us together. That would be a marvelous time. We always appreciate going to the Feast of Tabernacles or the fall festival season, and we talked about getting feast fever for all these many years before the feast time comes, and I think this year is no exception. We certainly do look forward to that. Now, of course, next Thursday will be the Day of Atonement. It's a fast day, and it's the fifth day of the fall of the festival season for the year 2005, and it is the second one of the fall festivals, what was called all the time the Feast of Tabernacles period, or season of the year. Now, last Tuesday was the Feast of Trumpets, of course, and we remember that. It pictures the time of the return of Jesus Christ. And to take over the rule of all the world. And as I said, I like that last song because of we will be God's family. That is an absolutely awesome thought. However, we aren't there yet in this physical life. We haven't reached that time when Christ is going to take over as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And brethren, there are times ahead of us that are times like has never, ever been in all the history of mankind. Now that's not, I don't like to say that, but it's true. And Jesus said it very, very clearly. And He meant it. There's no doubt about that. You see, we live in a society in which we have things upon things upon things upon things. And we all are a part of that. You know, we had no electric lights when I was a child. We don't ever think about that. We didn't have any gas to heat or anything like this at all, or gas to cook with, or electricity to cook with. We didn't have any of that. Now, we did have a few old automobiles, old rattly automobiles back there. And I don't think very many of you ever drove a Model T, but I sure did. Model T Ford was a real rattle trap, I'll assure you. I could tell you some very interesting experiences about that, but I'm going to wander off into that. That's all past. But Jesus, when He returns, is going to stop all fighting and wars, but there's going to be a lot of it before that actually happens. And we need to recognize that, I think. He's going to set up a totally law-abiding society. And He's going to demand that and put it into force. And a very marvelously peaceful world. Now, that's not going to come easy. And I want to talk about a little bit of that today. God allows the devil's influence. He's still the god of this world, you know. And He's influencing all of us. He's the very prince of the power of the air, if you please. Ephesians, the second chapter and the second verse. I don't have that in my notes, but you can have that if you want. But He is the prince of the power of the air, the very air you and I breathe, let's face it. And He's influencing everything in this world. One of those influences, frankly, is our dependency upon things possessions, the things we have. I am. I live in my house. I don't have an old pot-bellied stove anymore in there that heats the whole house as it was when I was a child. I don't have the old cook stove where we put cut up small wood in it, and my mother slaved over that cook stove making all the meals all of the time. And we don't have all of those things. The old, we called it a co-oil lamp, you know, a kerosene lamp that I studied by when I went to school. Never went to high school a day in my life, but we had to go to work. When I was 14, I had to go out and go to work, and I had to hold up my end as a man, and I did it. There was no choice. I did it. But we live in this luxurious society of things that we have. Today, we just walk over to the wall, and we have a thermostat that we turn whatever temperature we'd like to have, and it's maintained. Wasn't so when I was a child. And when some of you older ones were a child. You know what I'm talking about. We are involved in so many things in the society in which we live. I think Satan has planned that so beautifully to give us things upon things upon things that if the time ever comes when all those things are removed, what on earth would this society become? It had become the most wretched thing you ever heard tell of. And that, some of that is going to happen, brethren. I hate to say that. Now, I don't think God's going to take away all those luxuries from us. I don't think we could live without some of them. I can't. I could survive, possibly, because I know how to do that from childhood on. Well, most people don't even know how to survive in a situation like that. Let's be honest about it. All of you young people grew up with many of these things. You don't know what it was like to raise all your own food. About the only thing we ever bought was salt and sugar and some of the spices and few things like that. And everything else we grew. And we lived on that. And probably my health is as good as it is today as a result of some of that, because we had good food out of the ground. And it was good ground back in those days yet, too. My dad bought 40 acres of land that was wild prairie land and not ever broken up. And that was good soil. You see, when my older brothers broke up that soil, why, that was that soil had some trace minerals in it yet. And I grew up on food from the kind of soil that really had some value to it. I say this because we are involved in things. That's what I'm trying to point out to you. That we're involved in the luxuries of life. I know that there are many business buildings, and I worked in one, where there was no windows whatsoever. If the lights went out, it was like a tomb. Dark. Totally. Well, we never had that kind of thing in the society in my young years. You had gas lights in the towns, and I remember some of those yet, as far as that goes. Now, they did have electric lights, and they were coming into vogue by the time that I was born, but they weren't all that prominent yet, and they still had old gas light standards around in all of the towns and so forth. We have things today, though. How would we live without them? Now, I just said, we talk about the high price of gasoline, and it is. I know it, and you know it, as far as that goes. But what would happen if we didn't have any petroleum? Suddenly. Think about that. How would the stores get any products? All the trucks that drive and bring all of the things from all the warehouses and so forth. I don't think that's going to happen until that end time comes when man destroys himself, and that's going to be a very short period of time, because the whole populace of the world would be gone if it went on very long. Might as well be honest about it. Matthew 24:21, the famous old verse we always turn to. Matthew 24:21. Jesus' very words. You know Matthew 24 and Mark 13 and Luke 21 are the what do we call them? The Olivet Prophecy, the scriptures on the end time, and I've covered so many things in there. Verse 21 of Matthew 24. For then shall be great tribulation. How bad? Such as has not been since the beginning of the world, of all of mankind, since God created Adam on this earth, not from the time, the beginning of the world unto this time, nor ever shall be again, nor one and only. Now, we've had some pretty bad times on this world. Think about it, the history of mankind. I think the flood was a pretty bad time, to be frank about it. But this is going to be worse. Worse in what way? Well, I can give you a few clues. In one sense of the word, I'm real happy to be 84 years of age. And I don't think that I'm going to see that time, personally. But the time is going to come, whether I see it or not. And there's no doubt about it, it's coming. How soon? I don't know. But it's going to come, there's no doubt about it. Now, this is talking about the end time. The disciples asked Jesus, what would be the sign of your coming in the end of the age? That's the beginning of all of this. These are some of the signs that are going to be there. Now, he said there'd be wars and rumors of wars and a lot of those things and pestilences and these things, but the end isn't yet. So those things are going to happen and develop and grow worse and worse. I gave a sermon right after Katrina, and I said, is this possibly one of those marks along the way? The end isn't yet. But is it going to keep getting worse and worse and worse as time goes on? I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it does. But I don't know that it is, certainly. There will be a time of tribulation like there has never, ever been since mankind was on the face of this earth. Mark 13 and verse 19. I'll turn to it because it says virtually the same thing, but let's read it anyway. Mark 13 and verse 19. It says, for in those days there will be tribulation such has not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. Never again will there be a time that severe, that bad. How bad? Well, it's going to be so bad that I hate to talk about it, to be frank about it. My wife used to tell me back in the days when I would talk about these times of tribulation that are coming upon this world, she'd say, don't quote some of those scriptures because they're so bad you can't. She said, I don't even want to hear them. Well, I'm not going to quote some of them, but I'm going to quote Ezekiel, the 5th chapter, to tell you the magnitude. That's what I'm interested in here today. Not the details. I don't want to go into a lot of details about that. I want to go into to point out to you the fact that he said there will be a time of tribulation like there's never, ever been before. Ezekiel, the 5th chapter. And I want to turn to I'll turn to verse 12. You can read the chapter, the verses leading up to this from the beginning, how he said he was to divide the hair and put it into three parts and so forth. But then he gives the meaning of all of this down in verse 12. It says, one third of you shall die of pestilence. How many are one third of the population of the world? Well, you could just take a quick cut at it and say there are some 6 billions of people or something like that, and if a third of them are gone, there's 2 billion dead, outright. That's pretty bad pestilence, brethren. I don't know what that's going to be, necessarily, but it's going to happen. It's prophesied, and it is going to happen. I believe it is a part of what Jesus said, a time of tribulation like there has never, ever been on the face of this earth. One third shall die of the pestilence and be consumed with famine in your midst. Now, it would be nice if that was just all there is to that, but go right on. And one third shall fall by the sword. Oh, well, then there's going to be wars of the type that are going to destroy a third of the population of the people. I can't soften that, brethren. That is the magnitude of what's going to come. I didn't say how. I'm not going to go through a whole bunch of prophecies to point out how these things are going to come about, because when they're going to come and exactly how it's going to happen, I don't know anyway. But there are a lot of descriptive prophecies about them. But he says, and I will scatter one and the other one third to all the world, all the winds, and I'll draw out a sword after them. Oh, wait a minute. Two-thirds outright die. Now, the last one-third then has to suffer. War and the rest of these things, the result. That is going to be a time like there has never been on the history of this earth, and never will be another one. Never will be another one. There are many, many prophecies I could talk about to cover some of the details of this. That's not my purpose today. I want to show the magnitude of how bad this is going to be. Maybe that could help us to be awfully happy to realize that God is going to make us a part of His family, and we can look at the time that goes beyond that, as will be pictured during the Feast of Tabernacles, the reign of Jesus Christ on this earth for 1,000 years. But before that comes, this time has to happen, brethren. There's no way out of it. The world can laugh at it, and they can take God out of their schools and God out of their public buildings and all of this sort of thing, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Now, when he says the last one-third will be scattered to the wind, and I'll draw out a sword after them. Thus, verse 13, shall my anger be spent, and I will cause my fury to rest upon them, and I'll be avenged. And they shall know that I, the Eternal, have spoken it in my zeal, and I have spent my fury upon them. Now, when God spends His fury upon them, how does He do that? All He has to do is take hands off. Man will kill himself. Mankind will kill himself. I have heard Mr. Armstrong say that so many times when he used to preach about this. And he would say, science tells us we can solve any problem that ever comes up. Just give us enough time and we'll solve it. You know, we had a horrible polio epidemic some years ago, and we had a polio vaccine, and we don't have that anymore in the same way. We can solve any problem that comes along. Just give us enough time. What we have done is just got ourselves dug deeper and deeper in the pit. Excuse me, but I'll say it like it is. And I think a lot of it is so glorious because we have all of these things, I call them, luxuries that we live in our day. I couldn't travel like I when I was in the 20s when I was little. I couldn't travel like I do today and effectively. Now, there are a lot of advantages to the things we have. I hope we're grateful for the blessings that God gives us. I hope I am too, as far as that goes. I try to be thankful to God for what He has given us. But when that last one-third sees wars and pestilences and things that happen to them, how many are going to remain before God finally stops it all? Now, when He finally stops it all, how many are going to be left? Isaiah, the 6th chapter. I'll give you a hint, at least, of what God tells us. Isaiah, the 6th chapter, and verse 8. Where Isaiah says, "And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" Then Isaiah spoke right up there, see? Isaiah, "And I said, Here am I, send me." And he said, "Go and tell this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand." Now, this could get agonizing after a while, you know. We listen to this and we live in these luxurious things. And what on earth is he talking about? It's so nice to live in this society. Sure it is. Keep on hearing and do not understand. Keep on seeing but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy. Shut their eyes lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and return and be healed. No, you try to tell any of the news media today about some of these things that are going to happen, they'll laugh in your face. Get out of that old antiquated book. Don't believe that stuff. That's what they'll tell you. It's happened. You know, we've had it happen. There's no doubt about that. You don't believe that stuff. They hear it, but they don't believe it. And they see these things happen right before their eyes, but they don't know that God is allowing all of that to happen. All He has to do is keep hands off, and Satan will keep on destroying us. Now, let's see. Verse 11. Then I saw it. Even Isaiah said, "Oh, surely God, you wouldn't do this." But he said, and I said, "Lord, how long?" And he answered, "Until the cities are laid waste without inhabitant. Destroy them out of the cities. The houses are without a man. The land is utterly desolate." Now, if you saw 9/10 of all of the people, or if you saw 10 houses out here and 9 of them were empty, you'd say, that's pretty desolate, I would say. But it says, "And Lord has removed men far away," verse 12 says, "and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land." But look at verse 13. "But yet, God says, I'll save a tithe." Kind of interesting. "Yet a tenth will be in it, and will return and be for consuming, as a terebinth tree and as an oak." But they're not going to be consumed. There will be a seed left going into the time when Jesus Christ returns. There will be a few people left. I used to tell my children, read these scriptures to them and tell them that you'll probably be the best of the seed to go into that because you already know it's coming. Your children may have that. Oh, I may go farther than that. You may grow into adults and have to, have it come later. I don't know. I'm not setting time. I used to do that and I got burnt so many times I don't do that anymore. Set times like that. But it says then, "as a terebinth tree and as an oak whose stump remains when it is cut down." So there's still a sprout comes up from the stump. So the holy seed shall be its stump. Who's going to be the seed? The holy seed. Now that's interesting because the ones that will absolutely rebel against God are not the holy ones, and they're going to die. Because God's going to demand, when He returns, obedience to those laws that will be a blessing to them. so that they can live with the blessings of obedience to God's laws. I've said so many times, I sort of lived in a pressure cooker back in the days when I was a supervising engineer and did all of those things. And when I came into the ministry, that sort of eased off. I never had that anymore. You know, it's a blessing. It's a blessing that I don't have that pressure cooker kind of thing living in this world. I feel sorry for some of you that are still doing it because all kinds of things happen. I know because I was there. I spent 10 years as a supervising engineer, and I know, and I had things coming at me from everywhere because I was young, and they didn't want this young punk in there as a supervising engineer. You know, who does he think he is? Well, God blessed me, and I was able to keep up the pace, but it was still a pressure cooker situation, I called it that, living in it. I know what it's like to be out there in that situation. I'm grateful for the precious truth that God has given me the opportunity to go out and try my level best to teach to other people. And I've been at that now for 42 years, so directly as an ordained elder. And so it's a tremendous blessing. But God's going to save a seed going into the millennium, and there will be a seed. They won't all die. God will save a tithe, if I can put it that way. By that time, when God has allowed all of these things to happen to people, do you think that remaining 1 out of 10 will be moldable? That they might be willing to try the obedience route this time? To try to obey God? And see the benefits of it? They're going to have to. And then they're going to even then have some problems, but they'll be forced to do it and finally learn to obey all of these things. And if they don't, there'll be a being right there to say, hey, this is the way, walk you in it. I don't put that in my scriptures, but turn to Isaiah, the 30th chapter, and let's just see that. Isaiah chapter 30. Oh, I had 29. That won't work. Verse 19. For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. Zion that isn't even there right now, incidentally, but I won't go into that either. But you shall weep no more. Godspeed that day. There won't be any weeping. There won't be any cause for it. He will be very gracious to you at the sound of your cry. And when he hears it, he'll answer you. And though the Lord give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, that's all they've ever known all their life. Lived it. That's all they've ever known. And it's going to be there. Yet your teachers will not be moved into a corner anymore. But your eyes shall see your teachers, and your ears will hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it, when you turn to the right hand or when you turn to the left. You stay on the path. Obey God's laws. And if you don't, there will be a being there, right there, says, nope, you don't do that. You'll hurt yourself. You don't have to hurt yourself. Nope, the whole society has lived that way. I grew up that way. I didn't know any better. And I've told you many times, if God can convert me with all of my background, He can convert anybody. But I'm not proud of the first 30 years of my life, I'll assure you, from things that I did either. But that's neither here nor there. I repented deeply of that. God is willing to forgive when we repent. And we can be forgiven of the things. And when that time comes, those people will obey. They won't have any choice. If they step out of line, God will say, nope, here's the way, you walk in it. And then they'll learn to enjoy that finally. Oh, that's the way we should have done it all our lives. Satan won't be there anymore. because that will have changed. I want to go to the 13th chapter of Isaiah here, for I guess Steve covered some of that the last time about this, but I want to turn to it anyway. Isaiah, the 13th chapter, verse 9. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel, with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate. And he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and the other and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon shall not cause its light to shine. As he said, I don't know, maybe the air will be so full of dirt and dust because of all of the horrendous corruption all over the world that you can't even see the sun. I don't know what it's going to be. And I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud, and I'll lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. And I'll make a mortal more rare than fine gold. 9/10 of them are gone. A man more than the golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move out of her place. When the earth is shaken out of its place, does it go out of orbit? Well, it's going to wobble in its orbit, I think, is what that's indicated here. It can't go completely out because everything would be destroyed altogether. But in the wrath of the Eternal of Hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger, it shall be as a hunted gazelle, as a deer out in the wild, in the open, you know, when he's hunted. A little hard to catch up with him. Takes bullets to do that. As a sheep that no one takes in. Every man shall turn to his own people, and everyone will flee to his own land. They'll run in horror then, is what it amounts to. In panic is what it boils down to. There are other places where it says he's going to turn to his brother and say, you take care of me! And he said, no, I can't do that! And I won't turn to all of those scriptures. There are many, many, many prophecies about these things, brethren. I just want to point out the magnitude of the stuff that is literally going to happen. And set your minds on that, because we can appreciate then the blessings that God is going to give us when he finally comes and changes all of that. Let's see. Verse 15. Everyone who is found will be thrust through, and everyone who is captured will fall by the sword. Now, God can protect you anywhere, at any time, if you obey. There's no doubt about that. But if they're thrust through by the sword, then they're running for fear of what they have done and the evil that they have accomplished. And God's going to allow that. Their children also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. That is not very pretty, brethren. Their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished. It's a horrible time. All kinds of corruption is going to happen. And as I said, I just want to cite the magnitude of that stuff somewhat. The magnitude is a once and only. One time and only. Never before has it been that bad, and never again will it ever be that bad. Turn to Revelation, the 16th chapter. I just want to cite a bit of what's going to happen here, and as God deals with all of this. Revelation, the 16th chapter, and verse 17. I want to pick it up there because it's this is the seventh angel of the vials of the that God pours out when Christ returns, ushers in the seven last plagues. And this is the seventh of the last one of them. then we can see how really bad it is. Then the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, this is it. It's done. This is finished. This is all it is now. We stop it here. And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings, and there was an earthquake like there has never, ever been before, brethren. This is a one and only. There is a mighty and great earthquake, as has not occurred since men were on the earth. Never before, and it'll never happen again, because this is a one and only. And it is done now, finally. Now, the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon was remembered before God, and gave her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. That's interesting. Gave her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. That word for wine is the same word for wine all over. Oinos. And it obviously has a spiritual connotation here rather than simply the physical wine. Let's see. Verse 18, isn't it? Verse 19. Gives a cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Verse 20. Then every island fled away. Now, wait a minute. That's quite an earthquake. The islands are not there anymore. I know when my brother, I wasn't in this situation myself, but my brother spent 20 years in the Navy in World War II, and 16 of them were at sea out in the Pacific on the Pennsylvania battleship. And he said, many, many, many a day they would be out there in the Pacific Ocean, and he said, you just see these mountains sticking up all over the place, little islands. He said, they're just billions of them. It's like millions of them around all over the place. He said, you have to guide your way through all of that in there. There's islands that are all going to flee away. They'll all be shaken down. Every island fled away. The mountains were not found. Now, when it literally shakes the mountains down, that's quite an earthquake, brethren. And that's a one and only. Every island fled away and the mountains were not found. And a great hail from heaven fell upon men. Now, if this great hailstone ever hits a man, that's curtains. Excuse me, he's gone. I don't know if you realize what kind of a hailstone this is talking about, but it says, every hailstone about the weight of a talent. Now, you can depend on the fact that they'll be over 60 pounds and probably up to 120 pounds. Can you even let your mind conceive of a 100-pound chunk of ice falling out of the sky? I remember when I was a teenager, you know, airplanes were pretty uncommon back in those days when I was a little teenager. And I picked up a paper. We got a paper every week. I went down to the mailbox 3/4 of a mile to pick it up many times. And I pulled this paper out of the mailbox, and I'll never forget it. I opened it up, and here was this tale about an airplane that had the engine fall off. Now, that wasn't that awfully terribly unusual in those days, because if you think that would be a tragedy that couldn't happen, it did. And the engine fell off. Now, engines in those days were not like they are, big, huge things like they are today with all of the power. They were pretty small. And some of them weighed maybe 40, 60 pounds. And that engine fell off that airplane, and it happened to hit a two-story house. And I read that article, and it stuck in my mind so well my hair stands on end almost today to think of the awesome power of that falling clump out of the sky. It fell down and hit the roof of that house, went right through that as if it didn't even exist. It came through the roof, hit the upper floor of that two-story house, went right through that floor, just as though it didn't even stop it, slow down. It came down all the way to the lower floor, hit the lower floor, went right through the lower floor, and that house had a basement in it, and the floor was concrete. And that engine, boom, came all the way down through to that concrete, and it was about half encapsulated down in that concrete. Broke right into the concrete. That's how much power that thing had from falling out. Can you imagine what a 100-pound chunk of ice would do falling out of the sky? No, I can't, hardly. I'll tell you what, if it fell upon men there, that man is gone. You can rest assured of that. But God's going to spare a few, and there will be a few left. See, there will be verse 21 I'm reading. Now, this is happening at the last of the seven last plagues. At the time, you see, Jesus returns to take over rule, and then these seven angels pour out these vials on mankind that's remaining. Satan is going to be taken out of the picture here, someplace here. I don't know exactly the precise timing of it. I can't tell you that. It's going to happen, though, when Christ returns. He's not going to allow Satan to influence anymore. So he's going to be removed. And that's Revelation, the 20th chapter, and you can read that in the first three verses. But here, a great hail from heaven fell upon men, each hailstone about the weight of a talent. But what did men do? Men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail. No wonder God allowed some of them to be hit by a hailstone that big. They didn't last long. Blaspheming God, since that plague was exceedingly great. Now, I won't go into any more of that because I wanted to get up to the time when Christ does return. And this is the very process that he's going through to eliminate all of the rebels from the face of this earth is what's going to happen. I want to go back to Matthew 24. I said we turn to that. Matthew 24 and verse 21. I read it where it says, "And then there will be a great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be." But verse 22. I want to read that now. "And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." They will be shortened. No question about it. They're going to be stopped. God's going to intervene and stop it all. Matthew 13, I'll read that again, also verse 19. "For in those days there will be a tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the creation, which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless the Lord had shortened those days," God will stop those days, "no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose." I'm grateful to have the privilege of looking into the faces of some who he chose. You are some of those that he chose. He has shortened those days. Now, how's he going to protect you? I don't know, but he can protect you irrespective of what comes. Nothing that Satan could ever invent could ever take you out of the picture if God decides that you're going to be saved. Turn to the 91st Psalm. I love this Psalm. I want to turn to that. Psalm 91. The 91st Psalm. "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High." Oh, then there will be a secret place, yes. Ah, there will be a secret place to dwell. "Shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." Boy, that's a pretty good shadow to be under. I will say of the Eternal, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him I will trust. Now, that's why you are here, because you are willing to trust God instead of the ways of this world. Surely He has delivered you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence that is so bad like there has never ever been one before and never will be another. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. You know, He delivered the children of Israel on eagle's wings, He says. In other words, that's a miraculous deliverance. I don't think He flew a bunch of eagles down there and flew the Israelites out of Egypt, but He delivered them on eagle's wings, it says in Exodus 19. In other words, it was a miracle of deliverance. He opened the Red Sea and the water stood on a wall, which is impossible. Not with God. Anything is possible with God. I've had people come to me with some of the craziest ideas that you ever heard of in your life. The fact that the wind blew so hard that that water just had to freeze, because water can't stand on a wall. You know, no, that can't happen. Everybody knows that. Somehow God did it, though. You see, nobody told God that, so He did it anyway. He made a wall of water, and they walked through on dry ground. Dry ground, and as soon as the Egyptian army came there, they all sunk down to mud. Isn't that interesting? I've thought about that so many times. But He says, under His wings you shall take refuge, and His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, but there will be plenty of it. You can rest assured of that. There will be plenty of terror. Nor of the arrow that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness. It's amazing how evil always likes to happen at dark in the middle of the night. Nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side. Oh, I hope they don't fall at my side. I can't imagine being down in the streets of New York like I have been sometimes and walk out at noon, and you cannot imagine how many people are out there on the street. If 1,000 of them were to fall all around, that would be a sight like you can't imagine. And 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. If God can protect you when you're out there and 10,000 fall all around you, there's nowhere you don't need to worry that there isn't any place He can't protect you. But He'll not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. You have repented of your past guilt, and that's why you're here, and that's why I'm here. God has forgiven me. That makes you clean. And you're not wicked among the wicked then. Because you have made the Eternal, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place. Verse 10, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. And it sounds like there are going to be plagues where people die like flies. For He shall give His angels charge over you to keep you in your ways. Verse 12, in His hands they'll bear you up, lest you dash your foot against the stone. You shall tread upon the lion and the cobra. Daniel was thrown down into the lion's den, and they didn't even bother him. They were like pets to him. Boy, they threw those people that accused him down there, and they caught them before they ever hit the ground. You know the story. Well, you shall tread upon the lion and the cobra. God can do that. The young lion and the serpent you shall trample underfoot. I have seen the application of that in my years in the ministry in a little different way. We came home from Bible study one night when I was when we were having Bible study on Friday night, Sabbath evening, and my two boys were just little boys. I don't know how old they were, but probably 6, 7 years old, I'm guessing, in that era, in that range. And they had their own bedroom. And you know how boys are. They'll take their clothes off and drop them on the floor. And that's what my son did. And he picked up that pair of trousers, or pair of pants that he had that he'd taken off and left on the floor. And the other son just happened to be walking right past when he picked that pair of pants up, and a scorpion jumped out of his leg. And right under the foot of my other son, he stepped right on that scorpion. And that was out in California, where those little almost opaque little things, they're real light colored, and they're pretty vile. I mean, they're pretty violent, I'll tell you. They're not very big. But he let out a war whoop that we could hear all over that house. Now, it didn't take me long to get in there. And I got there, and he was crying. What happened? Well, my other son took a shoe and whopped that scorpion and got rid of him. And how he got in the house, I never will figure that out. But because the doors were tight, he couldn't crawl in there. Apparently, he was in the doorway when the door was open, and he dashed in. That's the only way I could ever figure out he ever got in the house. Anyhow, he was there. I told my son, I said, you know that God says that if we really trust him, that he can heal us in these circumstances. And I turned to, I believe it's the 10th chapter of Luke and verse 18, if I remember correctly, and read it to him. And I said, come on in, we'll anoint you for this. Well, it was hurting, it was stinging. And we went in, I anointed him for that. He got up. Well, the stinging went off a little bit at a time. And he went to bed and went to sleep. Slept all night, as usual. No problem. He got up the next morning, and when he came out for breakfast, I said, well, son, how's that foot this morning? And started raising up his foot, and he said, oh, it's the other one. He didn't even know which one it was. He picked that foot up, and there was two little bitty spots there where that scorpion nailed him. And that's all you could see. No swelling, no soreness, nothing. And God can do it. You can trample them underfoot. Now, that wasn't a deliberate accident in any way, shape, or form. It has happened to be an accident, and God intervened on that. Because he has set his, verse 14 says, because he has set his love upon me, therefore, I'll deliver him. That's what God says. Because you trusted him, me, I'll deliver you. I will set him on high because he has known my name. How many people know God's name? They take it in vain all the time. I'm sorry to say that I was in the army when I saw that happening all the time. And I'm sorry about that. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I'll deliver him and honor him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. We are to be a part of God's family. I said I liked that song as a choice right before the sermon. I thought it was appropriate. I like that. I want to turn to Daniel, the 12th chapter. Daniel chapter 12, just verse 1. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 1. Where God, you know, this was right after the, what we've always called the longest time frame prophecy of all the history and all of the Bible. And at the end of that prophecy, Daniel 12 and verse 1, at that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince, who stands watch over the sons of your people, And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. There was never been a time like this. That's only one. It can only be that same one. Because there's only one of those. One that has never been like before and never will be another one. It could only be one. There shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered. Yes, there will be a seed, and they will be delivered. I wanted to conclude with that verse, because when your names are written in the book of life, you are special to God, and you can be protected from all of this. And there's no question about it. God is big enough to do that, irrespective of the circumstance you could ever find yourself in. Now you can be prepared for the good news, and it'll come after that, you see, during the millennium, which we're going to celebrate, that is, commemorate during the Feast of Tabernacles that is coming up. I hope you're ready to then go to the Feast of Tabernacles when the real king will come to rule over all of this earth and set things all aright, peace everywhere, without any question of a doubt. Then we can go to the Feast of Tabernacles.